Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Chris Murphy, the last time we were talking, Senator, was about college and affordability and all the rest, and how much it costs and how much the federal government goes to support it. But I'm a little concerned about colleges now because I think we have a new segregation going on, which is, you know, $60,000 to go to college for some people now, we know. And even state universities are costing like $20,000 to go. When I went to Hunter College for free, you charge $500, you're going to lose all kinds of students. How do we stop this new segregation?
Well, when I look at what the school that I went to will cost, if I want my son to go there, it'll be $100,000 a year. I mean, that's preposterous, the idea that it will cost $500,000 to get my son through a particular school. Now, the reality is that for a lot of these schools, the sticker price isn't actually the reality for students, that there are all sorts of ways to discount that price so that, you know, there aren't a lot of students that are paying that top price. But you are correct that there are a whole lot of students that are standing on the outside looking in because the price is too high. Here's a really interesting conversation that I had with a student at a high-performing school in Hartford, Connecticut. He said to me that he was going to MIT and that he was prepared to pay the price to go to MIT because he was pretty sure he was going to get a return on his investment.
Sure.
But he said that that was really, really hard to figure out. It was really hard for him to figure out whether or not he was going to be able to get a job graduating from a certain school in order to repay all the loans that he took out. That speaks to transparency. That's what we really need in the system today. We need students who are going to a particular school to be able to see what's the average salary, what's your ability to repay the loans that you're going to take out. There are a lot of schools out there that cost a ton of money and have default rates for their student loans in the 20 and 30% range because they actually aren't giving value for the dollar. And so I don't mind MIT charging what it charges because the reality is that those kids end up getting jobs where they can repay the student loans. But there are a lot of schools that don't meet that benchmark. That's where the federal government has to step in. The federal government has to say that if you're not getting good outcomes, if your graduates are defaulting on their student loans at a rate of 20 or 30%, we are not going to send kids with subsidized Pell Grants and student loans to your school any longer until you improve your outcomes. Federal government has to start getting a little tougher to make sure that there's actual value for the dollar that's going in.
Chris Murphy, of course, you were one of our favorite people to interview when you were in the House of Representatives because you're so articulate and you're so on the money. But I think we all want to know, what's the difference between being a senator and being, you know, a congressman?
It's sort of the most, you know, frequent question I get, and
that's because we're all proud of you.
Yeah, well, I'm really grateful to, you know, all of the people in Connecticut who gave me the shot to do this. I never, you know, imagined that I'd, you know, get to do this at this point in my life. And it's a thrill. It's a thrill, you know, in large part because of the scope of the job, and that's the biggest change, right? Is that you go from representing one quarter of the state to the entirety of the state. Connecticut's not, you know, as big as, you know, Texas or California, but, you know, it still is an effort to represent the state the way that I want to represent it, which is getting around it as much as I can. Second, in Washington, you can really work on any issue you want to. You don't have to fight for relevance in the United States Senate on an issue that you care about. You can be at the table immediately. So, you know, for instance, on health care reform, I mean, I think I've in short order become one of the leading voices on the issue of health care writ large in the United States Senate. Well, there were probably 40 or 50 members of Congress who wanted to hold that title in the House of Representatives. The other thing, Alan, that is a big change is 6 years versus 2 years. And I'll be honest with you. As I said to you many times on the phone, you know, when I was in the House of Representatives running for re-election every 2 years, singing for my supper, I had to be on the phone raising money 3 or 4 hours a day. I don't have to do that in the Senate. And so, you know, the amount of time that I can put into the policy work, the projects in Connecticut that I want to get funded, that time is infinitely more in the Senate because you don't have to be constantly running for re-election. And, you know, that obviously was the design of the Founding Fathers, and, you know, there's some genius in it.
So let me ask you a terrifying question perhaps for you, and that is, what if the Republicans take the Senate? How different will it be?
Well, it'll be very different in the sense that it will be perceived as a major victory for the Tea Party because, unfortunately, there are just not a lot, if any, moderate Republicans running in these open seat races and these competitive races against Democratic incumbents. And so you will have a new wave of sort of Ted Cruz acolytes being elected to the United States Senate who will be paired with a Tea Party majority in the House of Representatives, and they will send to the president bill after bill that looks very different than anything the broad swath of America would support, because it'll be this fringe element of the Republican Party that will now have control over both chambers. And now President Obama is still there for 2 years, and so he can veto whatever comes across his desk, but you will see some really extreme pieces of legislation arrive at the White House through the House and the Senate process. The other issue is that you essentially will shut down the ability of the president to put anybody on the bench or anybody into his administration. The Republicans, have made no bones about it that they will essentially stop confirming Obama appointees if they get control of the Senate. And, you know, that's a problem for the sound and efficient operation of the judiciary and government, separate and aside from the bills that they may pass that might be anathema to people in Connecticut.
Connecticut, of course, has had a terrible shock with its gun violence issues. Tell us where you think things are.
Well, I mean, listen, my life is fundamentally different today than it, you know, was on December 13th, 2012. I was there at the firehouse, not more than an hour or two after the shooting. I've gotten to know many of these families very well in the aftermath of that horrific tragedy. And, you know, my mission now before I leave public service is to pass a law that substantially changes the likelihood that a Sandy Hook is ever going to happen again. And, you know, that there's no panacea here. I mean, I think gun laws need to be changed so that we have universal background checks, so we get these assault weapons off the streets. But, you know, we also have a miserable system of mental health in this country, which requires a lot of adolescents to wait 30, 60, 90 days before they even see a crisis counselor. So, this is going to be a long haul because the NRA is standing in the way of all of that legislation. And I just remind myself every day that the NRA didn't build their political operation overnight, that the Brady handgun violence bill passed almost a decade after the attempted assassination of the president, and I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going to keep battling the gun lobby. I'm going to keep building a national constituency for gun violence reform, and maybe not next year, maybe not even the year after that, but sometime before my hair is gray or all gone, I will pass a law that will change the gun laws of this nation.
I was scared to death this morning as I saw that there's scientists in our reporting that the ice caps are melting at an even greater rate than they thought. We only have about 2 minutes, but what do you make of that?
Well, you know, just in the time that I've been in Congress, you know, we went from a 6 to 8 degree temperature change by the end of the century being the worst case estimate to now being the mainstream estimate. And, you know, as a state that lies along water with most of our, you know, economic infrastructure on Long Island Sound, from Greenwich to Stamford to Bridgeport to New Haven, we are really in jeopardy of losing the heartbeat of our economy, of our infrastructure, if we don't change this trend. Now, the president is acting without Congress, and that mainly is going to be my work, supporting him in his efforts to dramatically increase the fuel efficiency of vehicles and dramatically decrease the amount of carbon emissions coming out of power plants. If he is successful in doing those two things by the end of his term, and we will actually have substantially reduced carbon emissions from the United States, 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's pollution. So there's good news when it comes to carbon emissions, despite congressional inaction, and that's largely where the fight is going to be, supporting the president's climate action plan.
Senator Chris Murphy, United States Senator Chris Murphy, we are so proud to have you with us. And, you know, it's like getting together again with an alumni.
Back home.
Back home. We have one more of these that we want to do, and when we come back, we'll talk about some other things.
Sounds good.